責めないで削らないで負けないで誰だって。This is the Otaku in Review podcast. I'm Scott Spaziani from Otaku in Review.
I'm Shannon, aka Perfect Serenade.
And I'm Michael Camacho of G-Nitro.com. This is episode 233, recorded on April 12th, 2022.
Glad we got that off our chest. Mike.
Yes.
There's, there are times that I feel like I have to take a stand, and I have to use this podcast as a platform for good and for spreading a word, you know. All right. Now, people on the right, they might call me woke for what I'm about to say, right? They might be tossing around R word. That's right, R word as a weapon these days, but I don't care.
Reject?
I need to say it. I need to speak truth to power. Ken Penders is a criminal and needs to be stopped.
Who?
I have no idea.
How much crack have you smoked today, Scott?
Do you not know about the crimes of Ken Penders?
No.
Cannot say I am abreast of these criminal acts.
I'm not.
I'm going to take...
I am not a penis of these criminal acts. Is that right?
I'm going to take you on a journey. Let's go back in time to the early 90s. Nitro just walked away. Oh, wait, there he is. When Ken Penders was writing for the Sonic the Hedgehog Archie comic.
Ken Jennings?
And he invented a lot of characters, okay? Now, most of these characters were Knuckles wearing a different hat.
Ken Caminiti.
Right? Maybe Knuckles with some braids in their hair. Knuckles wearing a different jacket. But hey, he invented some characters. I'm like, all right. And then he sued EA and Archie Comics and won the rights to over 250 Sonic the Hedgehog characters.
Kenneth Branagh?
That he claims he created. Now, why am I talking about
Kenny
this
G?
Monster? Why am I talking about this monster who invented 250 generic echidnas as part of the larger Sonic universe?
Kenny Rogers?
Well, Mike, he's at it again, because now he's gearing up to sue Paramount Pictures.
Oh,
wait. Are we talking about Kenny Chesney?
He's gearing up to sue Paramount Pictures because there's a character... In this new Sonic the Hedgehog movie. I don't know if you knew this, Mike. They made some live-action Sonic the Hedgehog movies.
Oh, yeah, I
know
about Kenny Loggins. What about him?
And in this movie, there's a character who uses the power of the Master Emerald to destroy a whole army, which is events that are vaguely similar to things that happened in his Knuckles the Echidna comic that came out in 1996.
Ken Jeong?
So, he is preparing a lawsuit against Paramount Pictures.
Think he's going
to
win
Now, why, you might ask, why is this allowed to happen? Didn't Archie Comics and thus Sega have a contract with him? That
Ken
a work-for-hire contract that said that he worked for Archie and the characters that he created are the property of Archie Comics or... the Sega Corporation? Now, Mike, you would be right. That's clearly, obviously, something that you sign when you work on someone else's IP, right?
Yeah, so what happened with Ken Griffey Jr.?
Well, Archie lost his contract.
Oh,
that's it.
Ken Takahashi?
He just lost his contract. So all those characters he created, which... Also, Archie was supposed to check with Sega every time a new character was created, which they just didn't do. So... hey, I think I this is going to be fun. This is going to be, I think, for Sonic fans, as funny as the lawsuit with that high pitched weirdo in the anime world, which we don't say his name anymore.
Ken Whisenhunt?
I was going to let you say his name.
Ik Nganga. That guy.
Oh,
yeah.
To step away from the bad running joke I've been doing in the background, the guy that we tweeted about in like 2013 was molesting women, and people still said nobody's ever talked about that when it came to light recently, and people were like, yeah, we've been saying it for a decade plus. Yeah, that guy?
So
his name is Ik Lasagna.
So now, Shannon, you are a professional comics artist. I what you call her. I
believe that's what you call her. Sure.
Now I want to. Now I don't like making fun of people's art. You know me, right? I mean, that's not clearly what I do on this show. Once a week, twice a week? No, once every other week. How do we say it? Bi-weekly.
Bi-weekly.
When you know we talk about pretty much anything. Anything that has the concept of isekai in. But I want to show you and get a live reaction to this visual image on this audio podcast of the comic that Ken Penders has been working on for since he won the rights to these characters in the year 2013. Now you know what Knuckles looks like, right?
Oh yeah, I had a crush on him when I was a little girl.
We all did. But These characters are based on the Knuckles design, so I'm just gonna post it in the chat here, and then I'm just gonna, there we go.
Oh my, this is I'm not sure how to feel about this.
I'm gonna throw out some words. I need you to rate this piece of art on these criteria. So composition,
-10.
Okay, character design.
A negative infinity.
Yeah. Now you can't really see it there, but that character in a spacesuit just floating in the background, that's just the that's just Anthony Mackie just floating there.
Wait, so this guy
yeah,
these are all supposed to be variations of
I'm going to show this. I once again apologize.
Why does Sonic look like he has cum dripping out of his eyes?
That's okay.
This is often pointed to as like making fun of Ken Pender's characters. Like this is like the line of all of Knuckles' ancestors.
So that last picture you sent looks like a character, a reject character from the Goofy movie. Are you familiar with that?
I am familiar with that.
I'm going to send you a picture of what this guy looks like and tell me that reject that you just talked about, that last Lara Sue Chronicles picture, doesn't look like him as that character. Whoops, sorry.
It's a really kind of scary looking, I'm not going to lie.
It looks like he looked at himself in the mirror and drew that
female. Oh my god! That's crazy!
Tell me it doesn't look like he looked in the mirror and drew
that.
That
is so
bizarre. This is what Laura Sue looked like in the Sonic the Hedgehog comics. We're just going to paste this here. Looks like, kind of like Knuckles with pink hair glued to his forehead.
That literally is Knuckles in a pink wig.
Yeah. Yeah, original character that he now owns.
No way.
Anyway, I've been watching a lot of YouTube videos about the Sonic Archie comics.
No way he wins this. Do you think so? Do you think he's not going to win this?
Against Paramount? No. So it all came... So there was a BioWare Sonic the Hedgehog RPG that they made. That's a collection of words, huh? That featured a Echidna villain that he claims that was too like one of his characters. And that's what spurred this whole lawsuit. But, yeah. So that game ended on a cliffhanger. And the lawsuit was thrown out unless they made a second one.
Okay, so can you send me like a YouTube that you've been watching about this?
Don't laugh at that picture.
I will.
Look at that picture and laugh. You're not allowed to laugh at that picture.
Oh god, I'm dying.
Yeah, I'll try to get one of the shorter ones.
Because I'm actually quite intrigued by this.
I think this is one of the shorter ones.
Hold on. This is really bad.
It's really bad.
Yikes. Wow. You have opened my eyes to a whole other universe, Scott, today.
I want to close my eyes to this universe.
That is true. I will mention only one other thing that happened in the Sonic the Hedgehog comics that Ken Penders, while Ken Penders was writing, there was a little bit of rape, you know, a little here and there.
What?
Specifically, that alternate universe Sonic, it is highly implied that he had sex with one of the characters, and she thought it was the real Sonic the Hedgehog. But of course, he couldn't say it because it's just a comic for 9-year-olds.
Wow, that's crazy.
It's a lot of insanity. But Jesus Christ. All right, I got that off my chest. How you guys doing?
I'm all right. You know, just living. The one thing I want to get off my chest is I saw today that there was that Jujutsu Kaisen and Dolce and Gabbana are doing some type of collab, whether it's some type of accessory collab or like a clothing collab. I don't know. No details have come out about it yet. But I'm actually really disappointed in this because Stefano Gabbana is extremely problematic. And I do not care if these pieces are just like the crazy awesome things ever existence. I will never touch a piece of Dolce. That guy is still in jail. And it's kind of really disappointing because everybody's like, oh my god, take my money, take my money. You might want to look into some of the issues that of course are the because they're still very much involved. Yeah. So I don't know how to feel. That's what I chest. It's definitely not as crazy as yours, Scott. I'm sorry about
that. That's okay. I mean, when you say Dolce and Gabbana, I think you're talking about some fancy candy company. So
no, it's basically this. You know the fashion house Dolce and Gabbana. You know they make very very pretty clothes sometimes. But yeah, they're just very problematic. They've done things in the past. They had I believe Stefano Gabbana said, you know, called China like a shit country like that. Because they had come out with this video. They came out with a video to basically promote some show that they were going to have in Shanghai. And it featured a Chinese woman eating Italian food with chopsticks. And it just apparently, like, obviously I'm not Chinese, so I can't say how, you know, offensive it is. But according to the things that I have read about this, like, people in China were upset about this.
Wait, hold on. Was it an Italian woman eating?
No, I believe it was a Chinese woman. Italian food.
Italian food. Eating pasta, yeah. I presume. But, which comes from China.
What?
Pasta came from China.
What?
Well, it's the Italian food. Like, Italian food. And it's just like, apparently there were some Chinese words that were used that made Chinese seem this article that made it seem very, I guess, childish or like weirdly spoken Chinese. And anyway, you know, people were really offended by it, and it was just very culturally insensitive. And you know, so that was one thing. You know, he came out and basically came out on like some Instagram account and called Selena Gomez ugly. Basically said she's so ugly.
Fuck that dude. Selena Gomez is gorgeous.
He's he said something about Kate Moss as well, and there's who? Just been Kate Moss.
Just kidding, I know.
I mean, seriously.
I know who she is.
People our age should know who Kate Moss is. But anyway, he's just a very problematic person.
She was no Cindy Crawford.
He said something along the lines of people who use couples who use IVF. I think he called them like chemical babies or something like that.
Oh my lord!
I don't have the article. Wow, yeah, I don't have the article pulled up.
Sounds like a Trumper.
I don't have the article pulled up right now. But you know, he came out and apologized, quote unquote, for all this stuff. Yeah, I wish people would just read it. You know, before, you know, obviously this collection with Jujutsu Kaisen, whatever it is, it's probably not going to be available anywhere outside of Japan. But still, the fact is people are like, oh, I'm going to go, you know, I'm going to put all my money, give all my money to that, and blah, blah, blah. I wish people would do a little bit more research supporting such a problematic brand. That's my opinion.
Fair enough.
That's just my opinion.
I mean, but the luxury brands are not, you know, they all of them have their own problems. Like,
right, they do.
I know the Italian big luxury brands attempted to get a exception to the initial boycotts of Russia, the sanctions, before Italy finally said, fine, whatever, we won't send anything to Russia. So, yeah. Not exactly the most upstanding brand in the
world.
No,
they aren't. They definitely are. But at the same time, the thing that kind of sets Dolce and Gabbana apart is that Dolce and Gabbana are still very heavily involved in their brand. They are they lead the brand. You know, a lot of these other fashion houses, Gucci, nobody from the Gucci family is involved in Gucci at all.
Yeah, that makes sense. So, you know. Plus, hasn't Gucci been around for like 100 years?
For a long time. Yeah, anyway, this is not a fashion podcast. I apologize. This is now a Sonic.
It has an anime hook.
This is a Sonic the Hedgehog podcast.
I have something I want to get off my chest. It's called my shirt. Let's go.
All right, that's my bit. You stole it.
That was pre-recorded. You have no proof we weren't recording.
I have taken off my shirt during a live recording of this podcast.
All right, I'll take everything off. How about that? I got no pants now.
Shit.
Well, that's
so small.
That ain't true.
Nitro, you said you wanted to get something off your chest.
That ain't true. What?
You said you wanted to get something off your chest. Were you just making the shirt joke?
Yes, I was just making the shirt
joke. You have nothing to talk about? We can just go on to the anime?
No, I do have stuff to talk about.
You always have something to talk about.
Last episode, I talked about the movie The Pirates, the Korean film from 2014.
You did talk about that.
And it was a bit disappointing because they didn't lean into the comedy. So I've now seen the Pirates sequel. Let's see, it is called The Pirates, The Last Royal Treasure. And thank goodness this movie must have heard the complaints. It went in on the comedy and it was really damn funny. Overall, would I call it a great movie? No. But was it a fun ride and constantly making you laugh? Yes. I really think if anybody's seen the first Pirates, you actually won't even need to see the first one. This one mostly stands alone with very few connections to the old one. I don't think any of the cast is back outside of like a few smaller parts. But it's super great for fans of the comedic actor Lee Kwang Soo. He is a constant punching bag in this movie, and he's great as always. So if you watch the Korean variety show Running Man, you'll enjoy his acting here. I tried to tell my best friend about the movie. She didn't even respond.
I've been busy. Believe it or not.
Didn't even say I'm busy until right now.
Man, leave me alone. You got a lot of shit going on.
So I highly recommend that. It's on Netflix. People should check that out if they get the chance. And the only other thing, I talked about it briefly the last show as well, but it is prepared and ready to go. My 2014 top 100 will be out by the time Scott gets his podcast out. Took me about a month to get it together. About a month. It was a lot of work in a short amount of time, and I've gotten to the point where like the ranking's pretty much done, and I keep moving like songs back and forth like one or two spots, and I'm like, I could do this forever. On the day, whatever I feel like this song should be. And I'm like, should it be 48 or 50? Should it be 75 or 74? And so I hit that point where I'm just constantly like rotating things back and forth. And it's like, okay, I'm going nowhere at this point. So it's time to put it out. I will be immediately starting on my 2015. I've already got the playlist mostly compiled. And there's 477 videos on the playlist. My plan is to have it up by the beginning of June so I can focus on the first half of 2020's playlist. So I'm not rushing at the end of the year. But yeah, I'm going to be focused on 2015 next. So super hyped, and then taking that break to work on this current year stuff. So that's really all I had to talk about. That's not anime. Oh, my dog met the Easter Bunny, which is awesome.
Did you get pictures?
Yeah, I posted them on Twitter. Okay. And I posted them in my Discord under Animal Plant.
I'm going to go look.
Yeah.
I love
it. One of them, she's sticking her tongue out. It's super cute. So.
Met the Easter Bunny.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Actually, you know what? I got something to get off my chest right here. Because none of us have kids. So I want to talk about how a brewery has an event for your dogs to meet the Easter Bunny. Dogs only. And what do fucking people do? They bring their kids. And I'm not talking about families that brought their kids with their dog. Only brought kids. And then just walked back there to get pictures. Like, fuck off. The whole thing was an event for one of the local shelters. And also a group pushing, a nonprofit group pushing for the end of, like, breed-specific bans. Like, pit bulls get banned, or Rottweilers in a lot of places. So they're trying to get rid of, like, breed-specific legislation. But yeah, but these families are like, oh, look at me, I'm privileged, I can bring my kids in. I don't have a dog. Like, y'all get everything. Like, go to the damn mall. Let's get your little crotch goblins out of here and out of my face. Nobody wants them around. Oh, I was so mad.
That's true.
But I'm just like, it literally says, your dog can meet Easter Bunny. So these are probably the same parents who want to tell me that me being a pet parent isn't the same as being a real parent, but you're going to go crash the dog event. So I say, it is the same fucking thing.
I'll take your dog to the kid event.
That's right, yeah. All right, I'll crash your fucking mall Easter Bunny next time.
Make sure Maddie pees on him, too.
Oh, I'd have to get
Tucker. I mean, I have so many questions. Did these parents, like see that there was a bunch of dogs in line?
Yeah, they didn't care. The thing, they had to have seen the event posted somewhere, and it literally said for the dogs to meet Easter Bunny.
I mean, I feel upset for the cats specifically, not the children, though.
I mean, cats don't always work well in... Yeah, but it says, come by the tap room to have your furry baby's photo taken with the Easter Bunny.
So how did the tap room handle that? Did they kick the parents out?
No, they didn't cause. I would have. I would have been like, y'all aren't allowed back there.
Yeah, I don't think they would. They're lucky. Like that.
I don't own the brewery. I would have been like, fur babies only. If you are seen walking with your kids to the back to Easter Bunny without a dog, get out.
Did they at least have to pay... And that money went to a donation of some kind?
You're supposed to, when you come out, do a donation.
Okay.
I basically had a $20 bill in my pocket and was like, bloop.
So maybe some money got to some dogs.
Considering they didn't give a damn about the what it was for, I bet they probably also didn't donate. I feel like if you're going to ignore that this is an event for dogs and you bring your kids, you're probably going to ignore the fact that people are looking for donations to an animal shelter and ending breed-specific legislation. I'm sure they don't care.
I'm with you. I think...
So yeah, I did have something to get off my chest. Thanks for...
people with kids are oddly privileged. You know, they feel like they can just do those type of things.
Yeah. They're selfish. Don't ruin my day with your little snot-nosed crotch goblin. Simple as that. Leave them at home. I will say the brewery was not a day for if you did not like dogs. It was just barking and barking and barking. It was loud in there.
Well, yeah, again, I hope they had they had enough people telling others that, you know, someone didn't walk in there accidentally and get assaulted by that.
It was hilarious how many dogs there were. Mine loved it. My younger one loves the social interaction. So there you go. That's my get something off my chest moment for this podcast.
Fair enough. All right, we ready to talk about some cartoons?
Yep. Yeah, Shannon can go first.
I got nothing. I ain't got shit to talk about, y'all.
Y'all.
I've been.
I got nothing, y'all.
I've been bad at watching stuff. I'm just trying my best to. So I'm really trying my best to come off this break of my webcomic. And just kind of have like a really big update. So usually my updates are between 8 channels and this plus. So it's a lot of work. It's a lot of work. Nice. So that's kind of where my focus is aside from my part-time job, which is going really well. But I feel that I might have to quit it soon because I had an interview today.
Oh, wow.
I had an interview today and then I had Thursday. It's a
same
contract.
Place or a new place?
No, new place. It's a contract position. With the Department of Veteran Affairs, actually.
Oh, nice.
So, yeah, we'll see how it goes.
Are you going to be like, what's the manager like?
Well, that's actually who I get to talk to on Thursday, so I'm really excited to talk to her and stuff. Nice. But, you know, again, we'll see. It's all happening a little... It's kind of funny because the contractor, I didn't apply for this job. They found me. So, and it's all happening really fast, and I was hoping maybe have just like a couple months break before I found something else, but I don't know what's gonna happen. I'm just kind of going
with the flow. You can't look that gift horse in the mouth though when it shows up.
It's not really a gift horse. I'll put it that way.
No, but I'm saying just the fact that an opportunity comes up, it's not like you can be like, I really wanted a couple months and then you're like, oh shit.
Well, yeah, of course, but this position, I definitely wouldn't call it a gift horse.
Oh, okay.
I'll put it, but yeah, so pass.
best of luck to you. I mean, a couple months of break would have given you lots of opportunity to watch some cartoons, but I guess now I have to listen to Nitro talk about something.
Yes, I am going to go through four shows before Scott and I have to gush about something.
Okay, why don't you talk about two shows?
Oh, no, we'll go through all mine, because I don't have a lot to say about a couple of them.
Okay, all right, that's fine.
So I'll start off with How a Realist Hero Rebuilt the Kingdom, part two of season one. I just kind of wanted to note on this second part, while it's still held to the fact that there's a lot of conversation, I felt like the first three episodes was a little too much. Initially I was like, oh, I like that they're keeping with this, and I was like, okay, you guys might want to calm down a little. But it was still solid. I think the first season I might have given a four, or the first part a 4.5 or 5. I can't remember if it's the exact same or I did a half under for this part, but definitely felt a little more down. But I saw a lot of people who were kind of going meh on the series because of a lot of things weren't always fully explained. You were like, how does this guy get so lucky? There's a nice final episode or two where like all the twist happens of why things go his way. And it's really well done. And even the people who were down on it kind of completely rebound. And they were like, damn, I didn't realize. They really liked how that came to light. So I still recommend that series a lot. If you want to... Isekai, it does start delving into a little bit of harem stuff, but still focuses a lot on government and all. Speaking of government, The Genius Prince's Guide to Raising a Nation Out of Debt, not an isekai, was really good throughout. It had stuff that was similar with... running government, strategies, a lot of twists and turns, stabbing people in the back, expecting bad things to happen so they're prepared. But it did a good job of having a lot of lighthearted moments throughout, a lot of funny moments. Things wouldn't always go the prince's way. And it didn't shy away from some of the fighting and even like chopping like enemies' heads off and stuff like that. So it wasn't like too cartoonish in its portrayal, but it definitely had some wacky moments in it. I really enjoyed that series last season. The one that's going to be the briefest is In the Land of Liadel, I don't know exactly how to say it, was a...
Lawndale?
No. Liadel. It's not really... It's reincarnation, but it's basically a VR MMO is brought to an end, and she is left in the VR world that she was part of, but 200 years have apparently gone by. It started off with me being like, I don't know if I want to watch this show. It was kind of dumb. It wasn't really hitting. And then there was like a third episode that I was like, okay, this isn't bad. And I found myself towards the end of the season when I started getting caught up on the other shows, kind of having some downtime, and I jumped into the show. And it turned out to be fairly entertaining, especially when you started realizing other players are trapped in the world. The problem is, by the time all that happens towards the end and things kind of pick up, I don't know if this was anime was good enough to get a second season, so I don't know if you're ever going to really get a payoff to what happened in the second half. So I think it was good, but I don't think, with all the series out there, I can't recommend it unless it gets a second season and they can capitalize on the way the last one ended. So 3.5, it was fun. It was inoffensive, time waster. And then the last one before we talk about the show we both finished, Life with an Ordinary Guy Who Reincarnated into a Total Fantasy Knockout. I gotta say, while sometimes the jokes kind of ran thin with some of the same jokes throughout, by the end, it really touched upon the two characters' relationships with each other, even though, look up the characters' names real quick. So with Tachibana and Jinguji, Tachibana was the one that was reincarnated as a woman. And Jinguji is kind of like, it was his friend who was always like kind of stoic, protective, always made sure Tachibana was okay. And it came out at the end that Tachibana held a lot of resentment and jealousy because he felt like he always wasn't good enough. And the reason why I like this show, and this is a little bit of a spoiler here, or a lot of spoiler, so skip a bit if you plan on watching the show. What I enjoyed was Jinguji finally saying everything he found that was good or cool about Tachibana to the point where Tachibana's okay, you can stop now. And it's basically like everything Jinguji has ever looked at in the friendship, but he's not that type of person to say it, was just coming out like a flood. And I said in the beginning during the preview show that this show was the I love you, dude, no homo, but they did a really good job with the whole attraction thing and not making homophobic jokes throughout. So this was a really fun series, super funny. I highly recommend it. It was definitely one of the better shows of winter season, and one I wasn't expecting to like as much as I did. So, but I think it's time to talk about the one that matters, Scott. So I'll let you take that away.
The only one that matters, is that what you're implying? That only one anime matters from now on, because that's the truth.
Go for it.
What were we talking about?
Huh?
What? Sono Bisque Dal Wakoi Wasuru?
My Trust.
Is that the show you're talking about?
Yes.
Well, I guess we can talk about that one too. Let's talk about My Dress Up Darling. Of course, we covered it in the last preview show. This was, it was a quick one core anime. I actually don't know. Do you know how much of the manga season one covered? Because I have no idea.
I don't, but if I had to guess, probably like most, it covers what, 5 to 6 volumes?
Yeah, of the 9 that are currently out. So it's a, you know, it's a relatively new title. And, So, I don't know. I guess I should start with a traditional synopsis really quick.
Yep.
So, the main character is Wakana Gojo. And we never really learned what happens to his parents, did we? No.
Not really. I thought, they passed away?
Yeah, I guess that's not addressed, but
It might be, but it was probably so short. They don't make it part of his character, really, so.
So Gojo, he lives with his grandfather, and his grandfather runs a traditional Hinata doll shop. And so it's a very specific type of Japanese doll, which is traditionally used to celebrate the holiday. But it's like, what is the translation, is Girls Day in Japan. And that's, so, you know, it's a very common ornament that you would have in a traditional Japanese household. But the ones that his grandfather makes are handmade in like the old style, and they are particularly beautiful because of that, and expensive and sought after. So while, you know, they don't, you know, they're not, you know, they are well to do in one way, and that they're selling expensive items, they also kind of spend most of their time with no customers because these dolls are fairly expensive. So anytime a customer shows up, it's a big deal. So in that kind of idle time, Wakana is learning this trade from his grandfather. And when he first encountered these dolls, when he was very young, he immediately fell in love with them and, you know, wanted to gain the skill and craftsmanship that it would take to create one of these pieces of artwork. So to that end, he has his preferred Hinata doll head that he kind of carries around with him.
Hold on, before you go anywhere, it should be mm-hmm. said, when he was a kid and he fell in love with these dolls, that he had an event with a friend, a female friend, who thought he was weird and basically shunned him for liking the dolls, because that's a key piece of information.
That is a key piece of information, because it's that one experience it caused him to kind of to shut himself off and not only like not talk about his hobbies with other people his age, but basically feel like that he could not be close to anybody his age, yeah. Because his hobby was part of a, you know, is such a crucial part of his, you know, his personality and his whole being. So it's not something that he can easily hide if he wanted to, because of course the second he goes over to his house, literally in a Hinata doll shop. So this is not something that he can just tuck under his bed. It's in every aspect of his existence. But so he carries around this head. I mean, I don't think he carries it with him to school or anything, but he's so kind of lonely that he, like, the head is the only thing he talks to aside from his grandfather. Yeah. And it's made by his grandfather, and it's like, it is a symbol of what he's aspiring to. But the only thing that he can do is he's training to make the clothes for the Hinata doll. So he does take a lot of time and effort to practice his sewing skills and his design ability. And that's what leads him to borrow the sewing machine in the home ec classroom at school. So I guess there's no sewing club, but there is a sewing club room, and the sewing machine that he used at home is broken, but he wanted to keep working on his work, so he goes there, and that's when the most popular girl in his class, Marin Kitagawa, kind of stumbles in, and he is terribly embarrassed because he is a high school boy using a sewing machine, but she immediately is kind of enamored with the fact that he can sew, and he knows how fabric works and how to craft a full outfit, because she then reveals that she has been sneaking off to the home ec room after school to attempt to make a cosplay outfit for herself, and proceeds to try it on in front of Gojo, and it is a disastrous mess. So Marin Gojo kind of explains why he's doing the sewing, and Marin seems very impressed and enamored with that, which kind of immediately kind of wins Gojo's heart to her side. And then she asks him for the favor of, hey, listen, I want to cosplay this character, it's my favorite character, could you please help me? Oh, by the way, she is from a hentai game. Okay. Yeah. And that's what starts off their relationship as, I guess, you know, it's artist and model, which will continue throughout the whole series.
And he but from this interaction, he thinks he's just helping her out and that's going to be it. Like, they're not going to hang out further. He thinks it's a one-time deal. He's going to help her with this costume, and that is all that is expected of him.
Go ahead. But there's a lot of things about Marin that Gojo gets incorrect based on the first, basically her outward appearance, right? Because in class, she is very bubbly and very energetic. And also very fashionable. What is the term for her style of fashion?
She looks like, based on the images, she looks like a gyaru.
Yes, thank you.
Just without the whole tanning.
She doesn't do the tanning, but she wears colored contacts, and she dresses in a very specific way. Very fashionable, has worked as a model previously. So she is kind of a lot more comfortable with the aspects of physical modeling than Gojo is, who all of his dressmaking and his dress modeling has been done on dolls. So there's definitely like a gap there in terms of becoming comfortable with what they're doing. Atop to the fact that, you know, Marin is very outgoing, has a lot of friends, where Gojo's been very, very isolated and closed off. But Marin looks past the flaws in Gojo's personality very quickly and embraces the aspects of Gojo that she likes. And of course, that's his artistic ability, his passion, and his drive to become better at the things that he loves. And those aspects of him allows her to kind of open up about her passions and the things that the aspects about her personality that she hides from the rest of her popular friends. You know, I think that The only
but I don't even know if she's hiding it or just she doesn't talk about it.
That's I don't think she talks about it. Like, she the only outward thing that shows that she is the super super anime otaku is the fact that she has like a plush on her bag.
Yeah, but I'm so, saying, you know, like, I think the one friend with pigtails knows, but she's not, like, in your face with it. She's not, like, showing off to all her friends. I think she's, like, understands I would put more the situation when it's time to discuss it and when it isn't. So I wouldn't say she's hiding it. I would just say she just understands that there's times to talk about and there's times not to for her. Because her friend Noah is the only one that seems to know about her her love for. It's never fully talked about, but it's implied.
Yeah, I think that that's that might be something that's that is missing, because where she is clearly like she is not shy about sharing cosplay images of herself online. Like that's
one of the major things she wants to do. Or anything.
But it's not. It's never showed exactly like if the rest of her classmates know she cosplays. They definitely know that she hangs out with Gojo because they do whisper about it. But.
And they seem to be okay with it. That's the one. I'll be honest. I was super worried her friends are going to be like the ones that just shit all over him. And I was so happy it didn't go with the typical friends who just look down on a kid who is kind of a loner and a nerd. Like, it had that potential to go that route and was like, no, we're just going to... They're actually okay with her hanging out with him. And they never really look down upon their friendship. So,
yeah, for sure. And it's not that it's everything in the show is very wholesome in that way. You know, I think the main conflicts of the show are mostly about are related to either the relationship between Gojo and Myron or a problem with the cosplay or that kind of stuff. It's rarely, at least up to this point that we are at, pointing out that Gojo is a kind of a weird loner or that Myron is an otaku. Like, their individual passions have not yet been the source of conflict in any. Whether that will change or not is yet to be seen.
I think for me, though, another thing I really enjoyed about this show was as more of a I think this show comes off more shoujo, so people who are looking for the manga that's more towards girls wouldn't really enjoy it, even though it kind of hit more fandoms than I expected within the anime community. I really like the fact that while you can tell that Gojo has like feelings for her, it's 100% Marin who is like constantly gushing over Gojo. Like, it is amazing to watch, because we're not just seeing Gojo constantly in, like, it's another misunderstanding for a plot. Like, I get so tired of that sometimes. It's literally just Marin noticing small things about Gojo and then just like, am I in love? I'm in love. Oh, my God. Oh, my God, I love him. But not, like, outwardly doing it. But I just love the fact that it's not just focused on him and his feelings. Because we all know a lot of anime focuses on the male characters a lot.
Yeah, if anything, Gojo continues to be a bit oblivious.
Yeah, because he keeps thinking that it's going to stop at some point. He keeps thinking that it's going to be cosplay's over, that's it, no matter how many times she talks about the next thing or moves on to the next thing or talks about like hanging out in the future. It does finally click with him later on. That she keeps talking about hanging out and doing something the next break, the next summer, which was like about freaking time.
Yeah, I think it was. I think that was the last episode where they said like this summer was really fun. Let's talk about next summer. I think that's in that last final episode. It clicks for him that okay, this is not. She's not kind of just using me for my abilities. Something more, and I am completely on board with that. But I don't think he hasn't clicked yet that this is. That she has romantic interest in him.
He likes her. I don't think he's noticed that she likes him.
Right. I think that Marin is a bit naive.
Yes.
About a lot of things. It's because part of an aspect of her personality there, she kind of is more excited about doing something that, or about one thing than dealing with like something that seems more pressing. And I think like one great example is when Gojo was supposed to come over and watch the anime that they were going to do their next cosplay from, and she oversleeps and she shows up at the door in her pajamas, with basically her breasts hanging out, at least showing massive amounts of cleavage, and you know, she's opens up and just proceeds to just Vietnamese apologize for oversleeping and not coming to the door right
and
away.
Having the wrong contacts in, not how she was dressed.
Right, and when she catches herself in the mirror, she says, "Oh no, my colored contacts
well,
aren't."
We did have before that one where she shows up in the bathing suit to get measured. Towards the end, she finally realizes the position she put herself in.
Well, yeah, I think it was more that the position that he was in, like, because the whole thing there was like she thought she was very clever because the bathing suit would make Gojo more comfortable than her being in her underwear.
Yes.
So she was kind of patting herself on the back for thinking about that. But also because she has modeled before, she understands that this is part of the process and needs to be done.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think so.
But she's used to professionals on that part. And not just some random guy who is like, you're still half naked in front of me.
Yeah. And it does at some point hit her the position, not only the position that she's in with one of her classmates, but the position that she put him in.
Yeah.
She's not oblivious, but she has, her priorities are a little warped so that those common kind of social cues are pushed to the back of her mind.
Yeah.
And frankly, I mean, if that's not going to be a source of conflict later on, like that, it's certainly something that could get her in trouble.
Yeah.
And that's kind of something I expect in the future. The thing,
I'm just hoping it's not some stupid misunderstanding thing, because one thing I've liked about this show so far, while I would say there's an overall misunderstanding on both sides how the other feels about each other, there hasn't been those stupid, like I talked about earlier, we don't know what to do here, so here's the stupid plot point of a misunderstanding that causes strife, and now you're just as frustrated as they are, which I hate. I'm like, can we stop being, like, stop making me frustrated as a viewer, and stop doing these stupid misunderstandings that we all know is bullshit. I'm hoping it doesn't start going down that route because the author can't figure out how to move the story. That's my biggest fear with a lot of rom-com.
Yeah. And I certainly feel like that's a possibility, but they're already put in some situations that should be moving the relationship forward.
Oh, can we talk about, this is a spoiler, so if you plan on watching this, I recommend stop. So there's a point where Gojo talks about, he does not use the word beautiful often. He uses it for the dolls, and he reserves it. And after Marin does her first cosplay event, they're back on the plane, and he's half asleep, and he basically says, "You looked beautiful," or "You were beautiful," and he's half asleep, and she hears it. And this is when it clicks for her feelings for him, where she, like, freaks out because you get that flashback of him saying, "I don't use this word unless I mean it." And she is just gushing at that point, freaking out. Like, he called me beautiful, and it's not just any old guy walking up telling me I'm beautiful. He's saying it because he legit actually means it.
Yeah, there were, it was a long path to get to that point, but there was certainly Gojo's weird, like, you know, his weirdness with that word was a plot point in,
it was done so well,
an episode. And, you know, he does make it a point, and it is not it's not seen that he, it's not even played as like something stuck up. It's played by like his aspect of an, from a point of view of an artist, right?
Yeah.
That he wants to use his language very carefully because, you know, he sees many beautiful things and he wants to reserve that word for things that he truly treasures.
Yeah.
And when she hears that word and collects it all together, it really is this realization. Because I think up to that point in the show, I think the show would have worked just fine if they were continued to be friends, but I think once they made that final turn of this is what she means to him, and it's a combination too, because it's not only the fact that she's, you know, that he finds her beautiful, it's he's also contributing to that because it's his art that is helping her be beautiful in his
eyes. Yeah, that's one of the things we should talk about is the fact that he does all the costumes, but not just that, he styles the wig and does her makeup. Like, he's down to where he does a lot of the, I wouldn't say he does all of it, but he does a lot of the makeup.
And the photography.
Yeah. Which starts to change a little later when we get the Inui sister showing up, your favorite.
Well, yeah, so...
I'm going to say this was one of the funniest ways they handled ecchi and fan service, though. I died the way that that happened with Inui.
Because what about...
taking the shower, and he comes in and she's on the floor, and he kind of gets an eyeful of her crotch, but they zoom in on his eye so it looks like he saw down there, and it just made me laugh because I was like, okay, instead of showing it or blurring it out or having steam, we got a close-up of it zooming into his eyeball to be like, hey, you know what he just saw. I thought it was somewhat clever.
That is, I think that is the one aspect of this show that I think we should talk about, too.
The fan service?
The fan service, because the thing that goes around most about this show is those scenes from the second episode in which Marin is strutting around in her bathing suit, oblivious that Gojo is the most uncomfortable person in the world, and... You know, so people are just like, you know, that I think is the most common way people see this show talked about. It's like, hey, it's a cosplay show about a hot girl and when she's wearing no clothing. And that is true. And it does fixate a lot to the point where, like, if ecchi turns you off in any way, I don't know if you could watch this show.
Yeah. I think more than episode 2, though, episode 11 would be the one to turn a lot of people off. Without going full spoiler there, but the costume she does and the situation they end up in. I personally have no issue with it because I felt like the show, even while you had ass shots, boob shots, whatever, a lot of it was done with, like, I'm coming over to get measurements. Yeah, we're going to show off a little bit of her, but it didn't feel like that's all throughout the series. That's all Marin's there for. She's not just there to be fan service. They do it. They do it with Inui, a little bit with the sister, but it was mostly there for jokes, for her cosplay. But I never felt like any character was defined by the fan service that comes about. Which I can understand people complain about fan service, and that's all that character is. You know, throughout the whole show, they're just going to constantly be in situations where, oh, their cleavage popped out, or their ass popped out, or crotch shots. This show has it, and can go a little overboard during the moments that they do it, but they make sure to not make that the focal point of that character's personality or being.
It's fair, I did not write off this show as a pure fan service show after that second episode, because episode 1 does such a good job at defining these people and making Marin incredibly charming without doing the fan service first.
Yeah.
I think if Marin did not come off as charming in that first episode, episode 2 would have just been, okay, this is just a boob show.
Yeah, I think a lot of people need to give the show more. If you can get past that, a couple episodes here and there, really focus on it, you're going to find a very sweet and adorable friendship that's budding into a romance show. And one thing that I like about that part is, even though there's a budding romance, they focus so much on the friendship with some moments of possible romantic future. Yeah. But a lot of times it's just them kind of hanging out.
Then those are the best moments.
Yeah.
Those are definitely the best moments. So that episode 11, which is certainly the highlight of the season. I think that where that's a very, it certainly is a very, it's the most, I don't want to spoil. It is the most sexually charged episode of the show, mostly because that Marin is cosplaying a succubus. So already we're starting off
at a sex hotel that she didn't realize there was a sex hotel when she booked until they got there. And he's like, oh, we're not supposed to be here.
But it is a culmination, like that episode and those moments are not only a culmination of how far that she has come as a cosplayer, he has come as a designer and photographer and her partner in her cosplay, but also is kind of the high point of their relationship. For the series, so for the season one
episode, and how we're talking about this, but I want to say, even though he gets bashful and some moments will, like, I mean, he's a man, so he gets a little turned on, he's still, even in that episode when he's taking pictures, just kind of focused on that, being super respectful of her trying to get the cosplay pictures in. He's not, like, ogling over the camera as she's posing, like, drooling. He is 100% respectful of what she's trying to do. I really enjoy that. Because so much anime, and even some of the ones I enjoy, are guys just who are complete perverts and don't care if they get into that situation. Because, you know what? Hey, I get to ogle a girl. But he kind of tries to be as respectful as possible. And I felt that episode especially, where she's dressed down in such limited clothing as the succubus, he isn't, like, completely 100% just being like, oh. But instead, he's making sure he takes those pictures, and you never get, like, that break where he's, like, just staring into the camera with bad intentions. Yes,
and I think that's how the characterization really has worked since episode one, because that first episode where Marin asked for his help with her first costume, and she shows it off, he basically tears it apart with his critique of it, which crushes her, but it does show he has, you know, when he is dealing with something that involves with his art, he becomes he essentially gets tunnel vision, and that's and so there certainly are two versions of Gojo.
But he kind of, like, tore into it. He was also doing it in, like, a very critiquing way that he was talking about the improvements he would make, so it wasn't just like, this shit sucks and leaving it at that.
Yeah.
He was like, I would do this instead of this. You need to do this. We need to do this. This needs this. And I was like, but he tears it apart. But at the same time, he's, like you said, it's very professional how he handles it. And I like that.
I think there's the hyper-confident, capable artist in Gojo versus the quiet, shy, embarrassed teenager.
Yep.
And balancing those two aspects make him an interesting character.
Yeah. I wonder if a show will be able to top this as show of the year, and it's only April.
It's true.
It's super amazing. I think everybody should check this show out. At least give it a shot.
Shannon, have we made you want to check out this show?
No, not really. Quite the opposite. I don't know. It just doesn't seem like my cup of tea, which is fine, you know?
I figured you were that peach girl type girl who would probably find this interesting.
I don't know. I might check it out. I might give it a shot. It just doesn't seem like it's kind of, like, up my alley.
I will say that my when Brittany first saw the GIFs, which were everywhere on our anime, she was like, what is this? What is this goddamn nonsense? But when she did catch me watching an episode, she then finished the rest of the show.
It's got a lot of moments that are super great for memes and GIFs. I mean, but I'll tell you right now, those GIFs, I could post probably 20 minutes of the show in GIFs. Like, it's so well done.
Yeah, I mean, the points of the show that are could be cringy to someone outside anime are easy to express in a GIF, and the points of the show that are well done, good characterization, nice storytelling are not easy to convey in an animated GIF.
But I think that's one of the things about this show. I don't think there's a moment in this show where, you know how a lot of times when you're watching shows as they air, you can see sometimes quality completely drop off because they rushed. I never really felt that. I never felt there was a moment where I was like, ooh, you can tell they had to get this episode out. super fast.
No, it's high quality. Okay. It's it's Clover.
Is it Cloverworks? Yeah, sure. Promise Neverland. Yeah. They're doing Spy X Family this Darling in the Franks.
Yeah, they're a good studio.
Yeah.
They're doing some high quality stuff.
Yeah. I highly recommend it. I think everybody should check it out. If you're into cosplay, if you're into rom-com, I get the ecchi will be problems for some people, but I don't think while it's there, outside of one or two episodes, it's not the super focus of the show.
This has been...
I was gonna...
No, go ahead, Shannon.
I was gonna say, the first thing that turned me off is actually the title of the show, My Dress Up Darling. But anyway, continue, Scott.
Yeah, I think that... What is the actual, like, better translation?
I don't know. I'll look at Google Translate and see what it says.
I bet you there is
Google,
one.
Google Translate fucks it up, but that day, SK doll Japanese loaf. So, yeah, Google Translate fucks it up. What about Babel Fish? Does it do it right? So, say Japanese too. Didn't like it.
I certainly agree it's not a great title.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a little off-putting.
But...
Well, when I first saw the title and the cover art, I was like, I'll probably skip this. Then I watched that first episode. I was like, all right, I'm all in. Like, the quality of this show is just...
I will give it a shot, and I will let you all next time.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think it wasn't until I, you know, heard the initial feedback.
You got about a month, Shannon. We got to watch that other show first, Kakushi Goto.
Yeah, yes.
So anyway, this has been the Otaku in Review podcast. I have been Scott Spaziani from Otaku in Review. You can read some anime reviews that are old at otakuinreview.com. You can read my just angry liberal rants at twitter.com/ScottSpaziani. You can also watch me play the video games. It's been mostly Kirby and the Epic Vore. Over at twitch.tv/godspat. Mike, where can people find you?
G-Nitro.com. Please check that out. I put a lot of love into the K-pop playlist every week. Like I said, 2014 Top 100 is coming out soon. Well, by the time this shows up. Twitter.com, like Scott. You can follow me there, /G-Nitro. But you can find me yelling A-Cab, as well as my daily Wordle and Hurdle scores, and me talking about K-pop and sometimes wrestling. I'm back to being pretty active on Twitter compared to the past few years, so, because I'm falling out of love with Instagram.
It's easy.
Yeah, I only really post my vinyl pairings normally on there, and that's in the stories, and that's about it. So, what about you, Shannon? Where can people find you?
People can find me on the interwebs, Twitter, Perfect Serenade, and Instagram, Lucifer_Ace_ webcomic, and then you webcomics for Zace, and I was a retired magical girl, and Tapas.
Yeah, yo, yeah. Peace.
What was that?
I had a burp coming. Deuces.
GG's.
Bye. Peace.